Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you an hour of horror. Later on, we hear Suspense with The Thing in the Window, but right now it's Inner Sanctum from January 9th, 1945 on CBS. Raymond Edward Johnson, our host for this story, Desert Death.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends. This is Raymond, your host. Welcome again to the Inner Sanctum. Come in, won't you? You'll have to excuse me for not getting up, but I have an awfully stiff neck. You see, I was out with a certain lady last night who collects very curious things. She spent the first half of the evening telling me how wonderful I am, but after that... Well, it's one thing when a girl tries to turn your head. It's another when she tries to twist it off. And now, friends, let me introduce someone who is a real lady. She must be a lady because she wants to reform me. Come in, Mary Bennett.
Hello, folks.
Draw up a coffin and sit down, Mary.
Now, Mr. Raymond, please don't talk that way. It is nice. Why are you always pretending to be so cold-hearted and creepy? Underneath, I'm sure you're a friendly, good-natured sort of man. Yes, you are. Underneath, you're just like everybody else. I'll bet you like to come home in the evening, put on an old jacket and slippers, and then sit down to supper. Yes, sir, and I'll bet I know one of your favorite dishes, too. Noodle soup. Or most all men like noodle soup. That's why Lipton's is so popular. Mr. Raymond, someday I'm going to take you home with me and feed you a good hot bowl of Lipton's noodle soup.
Well, thanks for the invitation, Mary. And now let me invite you to come to the desert and hear the story of Desert Death. It's an original tale written by that spinner of surprise stories, Robert Newman. And our star tonight is Horace Braham. Desert, eerie and mysterious at sundown. The sun sinking slowly in a purple haze. The cactus casting long and weirdly twisting shadows. The hot wind still. Silence over all. Driving fast, a dusty car comes down the narrow desert road. At the wheel is Dan Darrell, a rancher. Next to him is his Indian friend, Toby Priest.
Still worrying, Toby?
Stop teasing me, Dan. You know I never did worry. I just told you what my people used to think it meant.
Used to think? Didn't you say we ought to postpone our trip into town today?
I did.
And when did you say it? Right after you saw them. Three vultures lying together toward the sunset. That means 3 days. A bad omen for a journey. Hey. Look.
I see him.
What's a man doing out here in the middle of nowhere on foot? Anything the matter, stranger? Need any help?
You're very kind. Our car broke down and, well, we were in a bit of a spot. Didn't know whether anyone would be likely to come along here or not.
I didn't see your friends. Well, come in. We're going to Palo Verde. We're glad to take you that far.
Well, that's very decent of you. Thanks.
Thank you. My name's Darrell, Dan Darrell, and this is Toby Priest.
And I'm very happy to know you. I'm Richards, and this is Brennan and Smith.
How do you do?
Howdy. You're British, ain't you?
Why, yes. Clever of you to spot it. We're on our way out to the coast. One of those hush-hush missions. That's why it's so important we get into town.
Oh, sure, sure. Which way'd you come? Medicine Creek or Route 12?
Why, Medicine Creek. It sounded more scenic.
You're lying, Dad. You know that, don't you?
What makes you say that,
Toby? Use your head. He doesn't look...
Mr. Darrell, Surely it's considered rude to whisper in front of strangers, even here in America, isn't it?
What? Oh, sorry.
Yes, I'm sure you will be. But first I must insist on knowing what you were saying.
Insist? What do you mean, insist? This is my car and this is a...
I know. A free country. But this is a gun. That's why I can insist. And now, will you tell me what you were saying?
I was saying it, so I'll tell you. I said you were lying, that you weren't British at all.
No? Then who are we?
I think that you're Nazi prisoners who escaped from that camp up near Post City.
Oh? And what makes you think that?
First, none of your clothes fit you, so they're obviously not yours. Second, you said your car broke down, but there wasn't any car around. Third, you said you came by way of Medicine Creek, and that road's closed.
All right. Stop the car and let us get it over with.
You mean shoot them? Not so quick, Bernard. We can use them for a while yet. At least one of them.
What the devil do you mean?
Of course, your Indian friend is right. Very clever, too. But since I have a gun, you will take orders from me. Our first need is water. You have any in the car?
No.
And then we will have to find some.
Yeah? Where'd you expect to find water in the desert?
I told you we were Nazis, Darrow. I did not tell you that we were Rommel's men from the Africa Corps. That means we know the desert, any desert, better than anyone on Earth. Those hills off there to the left. Take the left-hand road at that fork there and head toward them.
But
do as I say.
How much further you want me to go up this wagon track?
Slow up. Isn't that Yes. The shack right next to the cliff. Stop.
Looks deserted, but there, next to it. Is that not a well?
It should be. Renner, go see if there's any water in it.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel.
You two come with us. We'll go look at the shack. What is this place? Those terraces up there on the cliff?
A pueblo. Cliff dwellings. Centuries ago, my people lived in villages like this.
There is water in it, Herr Colonel. Even a bucket to get it up with.
Good. Come into the house. Match, Schmidt. From the dust, I'd say no one had been here for a good many years. Prospector's cabin, wasn't it?
Probably.
That means... Ah, that's what I want. Shovel.
What the devil do you want that for? Want to dig yourself a grave?
Yes, Darren, exactly. But not for me.
Huh? What you mean?
Precisely what I said. Sit down. Make yourselves comfortable and I will explain things to you.
I'll stand if you don't mind.
Oh, not at all. We Nazis are very objective, analytical people. We decided we needed a car to make our escape in. Now we have one. We also decided we needed someone to drive the car and get us safely across the border. That means we can use one of you. The other one will die.
You wouldn't dare.
My dear Darrow, outside of the thousands of men we killed in North Africa who don't count, we killed at least two guards in making our escape. Do you really think one more death means anything to us? The only question is, which of you shall die?
This one here. He talks too much.
Well, that's not quite fair, Brenner. He's just, shall we say, less stoical than the Indian. On the other hand, I think that in the long run, he would probably prove easier to handle, less dangerous. That means that the Indian died.
What? Why, you...
Shut up, you!
Thank you, Brenner. Schmidt, take the gun, the shovel, and our Indian friend,
yeah,
and watch over him while he digs his grave. Very nice. Very nice indeed. Of course, I personally would prefer a deeper grave, but that's up to you.
The depth is not important. The only thing that matters is that it faces west. That is why I dug it with the head against the cliff. An old tribal custom.
Very interesting. similar to the Egyptians. But of course, they believed in a life after death.
My people believe in a life after death also, Colonel. And in this case, I think I can promise that I will not rest easy in my grave.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Hear this too, men from across the seas. Men with death in your hearts. For the evil you would do, evil will follow you like a hungry wolf.
What is that?
Not he just mentioned. A wolf.
Though you bury me deep, the earth will not hide me till you have paid for your crimes. Here where you have killed, here too will you die.
Now, Herr Colonel.
Yes, Brenner.
Oh, you can't, you...
Very good, Schmidt. I'll take the gun now. Fill in the grave, then meet us back at the cabin.
Ooh, what a place. It's worse than Quatara.
I wish you'd sit down, Darrell, and stop staring out of the window.
You're worried about your friend. I buried him very nicely.
I'm not worried about him. I'm thinking about what he said before you killed him. I should think that you think about it, too.
That? We have had more curses laid on us in more languages than you have hairs on your head.
What's that?
Must be the wind. No. No, it is different. More like some kind of musical instrument.
But there's no one around here but us. There hasn't been anyone living in those houses up on the cliff for centuries.
It's just the wind, I tell you. But if you want to, go take a look. Go take a look, I said.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel.
It's too dark. There's too much sand blowing to see anything. But wait. Go there near the foot of the cliff. There's something. It looks like... Evil God. It's the Indian. He's lying there. Out of his grave.
Oh, you bury me deep. The earth will not hide me. You are paid for your crimes. Here where you have killed, here too will you die.
A 100 curses in a dozen different tongues. Perhaps they did mean 3 deaths. If so, who are the others that'll die and who will live?
Gosh, Mr. Raymond, this is exciting.
What? Oh, Mary Bennett, I've overlooked you in all this desert. Tell me, Mary, whom do you hope will die, huh?
Well, I don't like to see anybody killed. But those Nazis sure ought to be clapped in jail.
Mm-hmm. And deprived of their Lipton's noodle soup, aren't they?
Well, I should say. Lipton's noodle soup is much too good for fellas like them. It belongs to law-abiding folks who've got a right to sit down to a plate of homemade tasting soup.
Why don't you go and perch on that tombstone over there while I go on with the story of death and the deserts? I'm warning you, if I do go on, you'll be seeing strange sights and hearing strange sounds every time you put out the lights. But it's your funeral. It's just a moment later now. The 3 Nazis are still standing at the open door of the deserted cabin, staring out into the darkness. And the colonel turns sharply, glares at Darrell.
What was that you said, Darrell?
I was just repeating what Tova said. Before you murdered him.
It's true, Herr Colonel. That's what he did say. The earth will not hide me. And there he is, out of his grave, lying there.
Shut up. Fine Nazi you are. Fine example of the Afrika Korps. Listening to the ravings of a savage and believing them. Schmidt, where did you bury the Indian? In the sand. Then this wind came along and blew the sand away. And that's all.
And that strange man?
Another trick of the wind. But if it bothers you to see him lying there, go on out and bury him again. Deeper this time.
No, Herr Colonel, no.
Well, that's an order.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel.
Franz Schmidt seems to be getting a bit rattled.
That's why I sent him out there. Nothing like facing a fear to overcome it.
Do you not think it is about time that Schmidt came back?
He's only been gone about 5 or 10 minutes. I told him to dig the grave deep this time.
I know, but I do not see him out there anywhere.
Well, how could you expect to when it's so dark and when the sand is blowing like that? Maybe we'd better go out and see what's taking him so long. And you too, Mr. Darrell, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Schmidt! Schmidt, where are you?
Blasted idiot. Probably wandered off into the desert.
Schmidt! Well, look. The Indian. He's still lying there. He never did bury him.
That means Schmidt never even got over there. Must have lost his way right after he got outside.
Schmidt!
I think you can save your breath, Colonel Lowry. Come on over here. The well.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Schmidt. Dead.
Well, why are you looking at me like that, Brenner? Exactly as I said. He lost his way in the darkness, the sandstorm, fell down the well.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that is what must have happened.
As for you, Mr. Darrell, since you discovered Schmidt, you shall have the pleasure of burying your friend the Indian again.
Jawohl, dear Colonel.
I'm sorry. I never did appreciate the American type of humor. Now get busy with that show.
May I just point out that while it's easy for you to knock me down when my hands are tired, not so easy for me to use a shovel.
Oh, I intend to untie you. But please remember always that I have a gun. And that Brenner and I have every intention of getting away from here. I'm happy to see that you've stopped pacing the floor and looking out the window, Mr. Darrow. That means you've stopped expecting something miraculous to happen that will save you.
Is that what you think it means?
Frankly, no. In fact, I think just the opposite. You're looking much more cheerful than before. You're thinking one of them is dead. Now it'll be that much easier to get away. It really pains me to disillusion you. Schmidt was a sergeant, a fool. I can assure you that neither Brenner nor myself are going to be bothered by strange noises or tricks of the wind. Right, Brenner?
Of course not, Colonel.
Good. And now, if we're to make an early start, I think we should get some rest. Brenner, you take the first watch and wake me at midnight. I advise you to get some rest, too, Darrell. Maybe you'll be able to dream of some way of escaping.
Thanks. But I'm not sleeping.
As you wish.
Good night.
Quite a character.
He was one of the best soldiers in the Africa Corps.
Yeah? Where's Africa Corps now? Where are you? This isn't Africa, Brenner. This is America. This is a part of America where strange things happen. Things that even the Indians can't explain.
Indians. Ignorant savages. Devilish music again. Where does it come from?
I thought you said it was a wind. Or was it Ulrich that said that?
Must be the wind. It must.
Oh, you bury me deep. The earth will not hide me. Till you pay for your crimes.
What is that?
That was what Tova said just before you killed him.
Schmidt was first, Brenner. You will be next. I'm waiting, Brenner. Waiting.
You're...
waiting.
You heard that, Tova?
Yeah. I heard it.
You're lying. You're lying, I say. You're just trying to frighten me.
What? Who's trying to frighten you? What's going on?
It is nothing here, Colonel. Just that music again. And for a moment it sounded as if someone was calling my name.
Someone was calling your name, Brenner. A dead man. And you know you heard it. So?
There it is again. You hear it?
Just that same noise, the wind.
Look, Woolwich, look. That Indian, he's out of his grave again.
How can you tell? It's too dark to see.
But I know he is. I know it.
I'm very disappointed in you, Brenner. You're losing your grip, slipping.
I'm sorry, Herr Colonel. It is just this place, the nervous tension, the mating.
Just being sorry isn't enough. Fear is a weakness. As much of a weakness as pity. You know that as Nazis, we cannot tolerate either one. And you also know what you must do, don't you?
No. No, Herr Colonel. No.
You must face your fear and overcome it. You must go out there and prove to yourself that you are not afraid. That you've just been imagining things the way Schmidt did.
But Schmidt...
Schmidt was a fool, and he had an accident. You are an officer, and you will not have an accident. Now go ahead and convince yourself that this is all nonsense.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel.
But leave the gun with me. What's out there is imaginary, but Mr. Darrell is very real. If I didn't have a gun, he might get ideas.
Jawohl, Herr Colonel. Here. I shall be back in a few minutes.
You're looking at me very strangely, Mr. Darrell. Perhaps now you're starting to understand the fiber of the Nazi character. And perhaps now you're beginning to realize why you can never win this war. Because we allow nothing to defeat us or stand in our way. Any sign of weakness is ruthlessly stamped out. Abel! God, what's that?
Sounded to me like Brenner.
Outside, quick. And don't try to get away or I'll shoot you down in your tracks.
Okay. Which way?
Towards the cliff, where we buried the Indian. That's where he went and... What's that over there?
My guess is that it's your friend, Brenner. Maybe you'd better make sure.
It is Brenner. Dead. Strangled.
So it was all imagination, eh? Just face your fear and overcome it. Aren't you feeling just a little frightened, Colonel?
Yeah. No. There's some rational explanation for everything that happened. The Indian. He is out of his grave again. And that's the answer. He wasn't dead. But this should take care of him. There. And you will notice that even at a moment like this, I look ahead. One shot before and four now. That still leaves one bullet for you, if it should prove necessary.
You think of everything, don't you?
Yes, my friend, everything. Now get into that car. We're not going to wait until morning. We're leaving here right now.
I thought you had everything figured out. You weren't frightened.
What's that?
What's what?
That noise, that music. It's like the music we heard after we killed the Indian.
I don't hear anything.
Oh, but you must hear it. You must. Listen, it's coming from over there.
Bury me deep. The earth will not hide me till you have paid for your crimes.
Did you hear that? Did you hear it?
Yeah. I heard it.
Here where you have killed, here too will you die.
No. No. You're dead. You're dead, I tell you. I killed you.
First Schmidt, then Brenner, now you.
But you're dead, I tell you. And the dead don't speak. I can't be really hearing you unless... Mad. No. I can't let that happen. I can't. There's one way. The Nazi way. A way to fool you all. This is why you'll never beat us. Never. Never.
Toby! Toby! Where are you?
Over here. Near the foot of the cliff.
Are you all right?
That first bullet creased my head. I was already dropping by the time he fired. Outside of that, I'm all right.
I figured that was what had happened when Schmidt went down the well. I knew it was an accident.
I was pretty happy that it was you that buried me the second time. That you put my face against the cliff, left a hole for me to breathe. The first time, well, it was pretty tough until the wind blew the sand off.
Yeah, but what about when he shot you again? That ungodly music.
It wasn't me he shot that second time. It was Schmidt. I pulled his body out of the well, and I figured that in the dark, no one would be able to tell the difference. As for the music, that's why I dug the grave here. You see these holes here in that cliff? My people drilled them centuries ago. The wind blows through them. Makes weird music. This bottom hole was blocked up, but I opened it while I was digging the grave.
Talking of graves, there's three of them we should be digging right now. Just one more thing I'd like to ask you, Toby.
What's that?
What you said this morning. Those three buzzards flying together toward the west. Does it really mean three deaths?
There were three deaths. Weren't there, Dan?
Bad boy, Toby. Never give a Nazi an even break. Unless it's in the neck. As for our three visiting murderers, they may not like our sense of humor, but they can't complain about our poetic justice. After all, it was in the desert that they got their just deserts. We must have a word of advice. Here it is. If you should wake up one of these nights in a cold sweat, convinced that there's something or someone in your room, and if when you look toward the window you should see a strange figure silhouetted in the moonlight, then pull the blankets up over your head and don't look out again. It'll be one of our three friends from tonight's story, one of the Africa corpses. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Puzzle for Puppets by Patrick Quentin. Well, now I guess it's time to close that there squeaking door until next week at this same time. So until next Tuesday night. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Inner Sanctum, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 9th, 1945 on CBS. You're listening to An Hour of Horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now time for suspense with a story from one of the famed writers of the series, the woman behind The Hitchhiker, and arguably one of the most famous broadcasts from radio's yesteryear, Sorry Wrong Number, Lucille Fletcher wrote this next story called The Thing in the Window. First broadcast with Joseph Cotton in 1946, this is an encore presentation with Robert Montgomery in the lead from January 27, 1949 on CBS.
And now Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations present
Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you Mr. Robert Montgomery in The Thing in the Window, a suspense play produced and directed by Anton M. Leder.
Mary?
Yes, Mr. Ames?
Turn that vacuum cleaner off for a minute, will you, and come over here. I want to show you something.
Yes.
Right here, out this window.
Hmm?
Now look across the street, directly across the opposite apartment. See that window about three windows in from the left, with kind of blue draperies?
Uh-huh.
There's something sitting there in a chair. Someone. He hasn't moved all night. I think he must be dead.
Dead? Oh, Lord of mercy, Mr. Ames.
Take a good look at him and tell me what you think, Mary.
Okay, but I don't favor looking at no corpses, Mr. Ames. It's unlucky. Now, which window did you say? Third one over. Wished I had my glasses.
No, over there, where my finger is pointing.
I'm afraid I don't see it yet, Mr. Ames.
Oh, no, look, the window with the blue draperies. He's wearing a sort of gray suit. The arm. Can't you see the arm hanging down over the side of the chair?
No, but you got good eyes, Mr. Ames. If you see it, I'm not arguing with you. What you going to do about it, Mr. Ames?
Well, I don't know. I just began to notice it last night. I guess I first have to find out if the man is really dead.
Yeah?
Hello. I'm Martin Ames. Are you the superintendent of this apartment house?
That's what it says on the door.
I've come to inquire about one of your tenants.
What is it you want to know?
Well, I live across the street, and, well, I'll be frank with you, sir. I've been looking out my window across to this building now for 2.5 days, and there seems to be someone dead in one of the windows.
Yeah? Which window?
Well, it's on the 10th floor. I've counted up from the street, and it's 10 stories up. There's the window with blue draperies about 3 windows in from the left, facing toward me, that is, and there's a man sitting there, slumped down in a chair.
Just a minute. I'll get out my chart. 10th floor up from the street, that's... The 9th floor, the lobby counts 1. We got 3 apartments there along the front of the house. It's in the front.
That's right.
Now, 3 windows in from the left, that'd be 9B, four-room. No, it couldn't be right. 9B is 2 ladies, and you say this is a man?
Yes, yes.
Young or old?
Well, I can't tell. The face isn't clearly visible. The head's slumped forward, but he's wearing a gray suit, and he's sitting in a high wing-back chair.
Don't place him.
Well, maybe he doesn't belong in the house. Maybe he was visiting somebody. As I say, this is all conjecture, of course. He may not be dead, but I've watched him a good deal. I'm home a lot in the daytime. My profession, the stage, you know, doesn't take up too much of my time, and it looks mighty suspicious.
Okay, I'll check it.
Do you mind if I stay around?
No. Sit down. I'll give 9B a ring first on the house phone. Miss Landis?
Yes, this is Miss Landis. Who is this?
This is Mr. Anson, the super. Everything all right up there, Miss Landis?
Everything all right? Well, yes. Yes, of course.
Okay, Miss Landis. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's that. No soap on 9B. 9A is in the country. 9C isn't home. I just saw her go out. I'll go up there a little later and take a look around.
Well, what about this 9A, the people in the country?
Well, maybe. They're an old couple. He could have come back and had a heart attack up there by himself.
Or maybe somebody else. Some other person could have been using the apartment while they were away.
Maybe. I'll take a look in anyway. Only if I got the window straight, like you said, it ought to be 9B.
Oh. The 2 single ladies?
Yeah, only it couldn't be them. They're real old maids. Say, if they knew you thought there was a man in that apartment, the 2 of them would just about jump out of their skins.
Well, I don't know what to say. If you're sure, it must be that apartment.
Oh, yeah. That's the place. But you... You probably just made a little mistake. You know how your eyes can play tricks on you. After all, it is quite a wide street.
No, I don't think I made any mistake.
Anson speaking.
Oh, hello, Mr. Anson. This is Mr. Ames.
Again? It's not there.
But, Mr. Anson...
I checked up on the 3 apartments this morning. No dead bodies in the whole place.
But I can see it. It's still there.
Okay, just where? Just tell me where.
In that same window, the one you said was 9B. Have you gone inside 9B?
No, but I asked them if anybody was sick or dead, and they said no.
You asked them? Why don't you search the apartment?
Me? You mean break in?
No. Just ring the bell and walk in and do it.
Yeah? I've got a search warrant from the police. These apartments, you know, don't belong to me. I just take care of the building for the company.
Well, then let's call the police.
Not me, mister. I didn't see no dead body up there.
Then I will. After all, somebody's got to do something.
I still maintain, officer, these 2 sisters are as refined ladies as you could find anywhere. High-class church-going ladies. They used to teach school up here at PS 13.
Yeah, that don't mean a thing.
And they got a dog in there. Now, will you tell me one dog that would stay for almost a week in a flat with a dead person?
I'm not telling you nothing. All I know, this gentleman, Mr. Ames, reported a stiff over here. And if he says there is one, there is. Till it's proved different. Right, Mr. Ames?
Well, I keep seeing the thing day in and day out. I'm not working at the moment and being home so much.
None of the other neighbors have complained. Dead bodies ain't exactly... Okay. Right this way, please. I hope they're home.
Well, if they ain't home, you got a pass key, haven't you?
Yeah, but we're not supposed to use it, though, unless for an emergency.
This is an emergency. A dog bite?
Sometimes.
Quiet, baby, quiet. Yes, who is it?
I'm awful sorry, Miss Landis, but there's been some kind of a mix-up. These 2 gentlemen want to look over your apartment.
But why? It's not for rent.
I know.
Come on. Cut out the palaver. Look, lady... A dead body's been reported sitting in one of your windows.
What?
Yeah. This guy lives across the street, and he's been seeing it over here for a week. So come on now, open up.
Dead body? But that's impossible. My sister and I live here all alone.
Yeah, we know all about it.
Excuse me a minute. I'll call my sister. Vivian!
Come on!
Vivian!
Look, lady, I'm not standing here all day. Anson, give me the passkey.
It won't do no good. They got a chain on the door from the inside.
Open up in the name of the law.
How do you do? I'm Vivian Landis. May I ask what this is all about, please?
Certainly, lady. I got a search warrant here and complaint of this gentleman. He says you got a dead body in there.
A dead body? Why, that's perfectly ridiculous.
Yeah, isn't it? But it's been reported, and kindly take that door off the chain and let us through.
Of course. But first, may I ask, how did this peeping Tom see into our apartment? I thought, Mr. Anson, that we were quite private.
He lives across the street on the same level.
Oh? Well, then we shall have to keep our shades down in the future. Although one would think a grown man would have something better to do. But do come in, gentlemen. Make yourselves right at home.
Thanks.
Is he coming in here, too, Mr. Busybody?
No, he doesn't have to if you don't want him to.
Well, I most definitely don't.
Okay, Mr. Ames, you better stay outside.
Yes, but officer...
Oh, he does want to poke around in our private rooms. Is that it? Maybe he had some ulterior motive in worming his way in. Maybe he's come to get the lay of the land so he can break in someday to rob us.
Okay, okay, he's not coming in. Now let's take a look at your window, lady. Ames.
Yes, officer?
What's the big idea?
You didn't find it?
No.
That's very strange.
Yeah? The only thing strange about it is your eyesight. You ought to get your glasses changed.
There wasn't anything in 9B?
No.
I don't understand it. How could I have seen it so distinctly and it not there? But perhaps it isn't in the window now. Perhaps they hid it while we were waiting outside that door.
Hid it? Now, where does one hide a dead body in a four-room flat? I looked in all the clothes closets, under the sofas, in the chest.
Well, perhaps they got it out with some help. What about that fellow Anson? He acted so nervous and subservient.
Maybe, but I doubt it. Anson's been running this house a long time, and he's a family man. It'd be taking an awful chance.
I see. Well, you probably think that... You know, it's so terrible to keep seeing it and seeing it, feeling that it's slowly decaying in there in secret. Why, the thing could be there for weeks. It's so high above the street, and it only seems to be visible from my apartment. Do you think, if you investigated those two women...
Investigated them? How? I searched their flat.
I mean their whereabouts for the last couple of weeks, their backgrounds. Perhaps if you had them followed...
By what right? On the grounds that you say you saw a dead man in the window? There ain't no legal corpus delicti. And don't you think so, my friend.
I know. That's the awful part of it for me. Legally, my hands are tied until the actual body is found, but perhaps it'll never be found. Perhaps it's already being destroyed.
Well, then, if it's gone, what have you got to worry about? You won't have to sit and look at it no more.
No. No, I hope it is. I tell you, it's really getting me down. I haven't slept for nights keeping vigil. I'm in a nervous state, and I haven't been this nervous in years.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, why don't you try forgetting it for a while? Try not to look over into that window or go away for a change. You done what you could, Mr. Ames. If there is a stiff over there, well, that's my business, ain't it? And if there isn't...
You mean... You think I'm... I may be...
I'm not saying nothing, Mr. Ames, but if I was you, I'd try catching up on my night's sleep.
Hello?
Miss Landis, I'm sorry to disturb you at this time of night, but I really... I'm desperate. I haven't anywhere else to turn.
What? Who is this?
This is Mr. Ames, Martin Ames, your neighbor, the one across the street.
Oh.
Now, please don't think me a pest, Miss Landis. I didn't mean to annoy you. It was only because I was so desperate that I initiated this search.
Quite all right. Goodbye.
No. Now, please don't hang up because it's worse now than it ever was. Miss Landis, I've been sitting here opposite your apartment, staring into your windows, and... I'm only asking you to help me, Miss Landis. Help me just a little.
Help you?
It's still there, Miss Landis.
What is still there?
The dead body in your window.
But there isn't. How dare you? When the police...
I know now it hasn't anything to do with you. But would you do me just one favor, Miss Landis? Would you go into your living room and check just once more?
I won't. I'll do nothing of the kind. You're out of your mind.
Perhaps I am, Miss Landis. That's what I'm trying to find out.
And anyway, I don't see how you can see in. I pulled the shades down in there yesterday morning.
Yes, I know. They're all down still.
And how can you see?
I can't. At least not the actual body. It's just the silhouette. I'm not maligning you or your sister, Miss Landis. If there's someone dead in there, it's not you who are doing it, but think of me. If you could just be here and look over and see the shadow of those quiet fingers and that shoulder and that head.
Oh, please, stop it. Stop it. It's not here. It isn't.
Tell me just one thing, Miss Landis. There is a chair by that window, though, isn't there?
Yes, yes, there's a chair.
A high-backed wing chair.
Yes.
And have you anything on it? Anything piled up, I mean, like curtains or cushions or a dressmaker's dummy?
Oh, of course not.
Then would you do me just one more favor, Miss Landis, please? As an experiment, would you just go into the living room and move that chair away from that window?
If I do it, will you stop pestering us? Will you let us alone forever?
Yes, yes, if it works.
If it... What do you mean? Do you mean...
I can't tell you, Miss Landis, until you move the chair.
Oh, all right. I moved it away from the window. It's at the other end of the room, and there's nothing in it. It's empty.
I see. Well, thank you very much, Miss Landis. I know what I have to do now. Yes, Miss Landis. It's still there. Oh, Miss Landis.
Where is it? I want to see it at once.
Yes, Miss Landis, come in. I do hope you'll excuse my appearance. I've just passed another sleepless night.
So has my sister, and so have I. What do you mean by all this business, Mr. Ames? You frightened my poor sister nearly to death. Seeing things that aren't there when you know they're not.
I know they're not. I wish they weren't. I wish to heaven I'd never looked out that window. I wish these walls were solid stone. And your walls, too.
You're a sick man, Mr. Ames.
Oh, am I? I wish I were. But I'm perfectly sane and well. I went to a psychiatrist yesterday, and guess what he told me? There's nothing wrong with me, nothing.
I can't believe that.
To you, I suppose it's a form of madness to persist and persist in seeing this hideous image. But not to me, Miss Landis. I've finally come to an entirely different conclusion.
And what is that?
The supernatural.
The supernatural? A ghost? What nonsense, Mr. Ames.
Yes, yes, I suppose it is nonsense to you, isn't it? You've been a schoolteacher. You believe in logic, common sense, the things that give a pretense of solidity to this frail little life of ours. But I'm an artist. I've always had a feeling for the thing beyond, the intangible, the shadowy. And sometimes out of the shadows we glimpse the yawning fangs of the eternal.
You put things rather oddly, Mr. Ames. Just exactly what do you mean?
Simply this. I checked on that building with the real estate agents yesterday afternoon after I'd left my psychiatrist. And there was a murder.
In our apartment?
The report didn't say. You know how they try to hush these things up, but it was a man, a young man. The lover of one of the tenants, a Miss Sweetser.
Sweetser? Why, that's the name of the people who lived there before us. But they were an elderly couple, Mr. and Mrs. Sweetser. I never saw any Miss Sweetser.
She died. She was the daughter. She killed herself afterwards by jumping out one of the windows.
Oh, how perfectly awful.
It's rather a ghastly coincidence, isn't it?
Was it out our window?
Who knows? She must have been a very neurotic person, though, this Miss Sweetser. Half crazed, almost, with love or jealousy. I checked on the details in an old newspaper. She cut his throat, nearly decapitated him. And it said that when they lifted his body out of the chair later...
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Ames. I'd rather not hear. I still can't believe... If there is something, if there could possibly be something, why haven't we seen it, too? Why should you...
Haven't you seen it, Miss Landis?
No.
You're sure? Never? Perhaps in the middle of the night, getting up and passing that room, seeing that chair outlined against the window?
Oh.
Just in passing, perhaps? You've never had a glimpse?
No. I really must be going.
No. Please stay and look at it. I want you to see it out of my window.
My sister Elaine, she's so nervous. I just can't leave her alone so long.
But then how will I know, Miss Landis? I thought you came here especially. It'll only take a minute. It's right here in this bedroom. I just have to let up the Venetian blind. Miss Landis! Miss Landis. Hello? Sergeant? This is Ames, Martin Ames. I just called to let you know that I think you're right about that good night's sleep. Yes. Yes, I'm going away tomorrow for a long rest. Shutting up my apartment. Yes, I'm all tied up in knots. I don't know what to think. Oh. Oh, they did. Yes, I saw the moving van in front of the house, but I didn't know it was those sisters. Couldn't take it, eh? Well, I can't take it much longer myself.
Marty, bravo, bravissimo, boy.
Shh, not so loud.
Why all the mystery?
The superintendent here doesn't like me.
I should think he would not like you, grabbing this beautiful apartment right from under his nose. He probably had it promised to a friend.
But you've got it now, Ronald, just as I said.
So I have, oh boy, so I have. And it's beautiful. I'm crazy about it. You've outdone yourself. You've been more than generous.
Think nothing of it, Ronald. I'm glad to do it. For such a distinguished colleague.
It certainly was nice of you. And I wish I could do something in return, Marty. I really do. Perhaps that play I'm doing next season. There's a part in it, a very small part, but very necessary.
Thanks just the same, but I'm doing pretty well just now, Ronald.
Oh.
Do you like the place, Ronald?
Like it? Look at that living room, those gorgeous casement windows. It's like a stage. And what a place for parties. I don't know how you found it, Martin, this housing shortage. You must have a sweetheart in the real estate business.
Oh, I managed.
Why, when your call came, I wouldn't trust this to anyone but myself. I left the whole cast just standing there on the stage while I came over. Tell me, how did you do it?
Oh, it's rather a long story. Let's sit down, shall we? Here, in the living room. No. You take the chair.
Oh,
I guess they must have left it when they moved out. Well, to be frank, Ronald, I got this apartment by a ruse.
A ruse? What kind of a ruse?
Oh, it was a nasty one, all right. I frightened the last tenants away. I told them I saw a dead man sitting here in this window.
Oh, no, not really. How clever of you. But of course, there wasn't.
No, of course not. I made him up out of whole cloth. You see, I live across the street, directly across, in that apartment with the striped curtains.
Oh.
They were very scary women. I used to watch them from my own place, always going to bed early, always pulling down the shades at night.
<No time. laughs>
Then there was this chair by the window. That very one that you're sitting in now.
Really?
One night, just sitting there late, I got an amusing thought. There was a kind of shadow across the chair that night. Reminded me a little bit of a corpse. It came to me that it might be fun to create a part, a character, a corpse that wasn't there.
I don't follow you quite.
Some actors need a play, Ronald, to create a role. Others, the great ones, work out their own dramas. I proceeded to invent a part for myself. I was the eyewitness, the innocent bystander across the street who saw the corpse in here. I kept seeing it and seeing it, and finally, by the power of suggestion, it became real enough to frighten them away.
It's very clever, but rather drastic.
Not at all. Proved my point, didn't it?
Oh, yes.
And it got you the apartment.
Well, really, that was very kind.
I've always hoped we'd be neighbors, Ronald. As a matter of fact, the whole idea for this thing came to me on that day last May when you turned me down for that part outside of Sardis. Do you remember? You said you were looking for a place then.
Did I?
Oh, yes. It was then that I first thought how nice it would be to see you. Right across the street, sitting in this window. I simply had to bring it about. That was the night I went to work on the thing in earnest. No, Ronald, don't get up. I'm not through.
Oh, really, old boy? I'm afraid the gang at the theater, they don't even know I'm here.
They'll wait. People always wait for you, don't they, Ronald? I could call them for you, of course, but the phone's been disconnected.
I'm afraid which way's the door, old boy? Really, Marty, it's been very kind
What's
of you.
What's the matter? Don't you like the apartment? Aren't you going to take it after all my work?
Oh, yes. I like it very much, but I... The door's locked.
Yes, Ronald. I'm afraid you'll have to find your way out. That'll keep you quieter. Silence always became you better than all that ranting and glibness and charm, Ronald. And now, I've got the part for you. A part to end all parts. You play it, of course. Entirely in a chair. There isn't much action. Not a line to say. You just sit, Ronald. You sit in this chair.
by the window. It'll be the greatest performance of your career. You liked to hog all the fattest roles for yourself, didn't you? Well, this is a part that's been talked about up and down this street for weeks. You'll play the part of a ghost, of a corpse that never was, an hallucination in my brain. And who'll be your audience? I will. I, the insignificant outmoded ham who wasn't fit to appear in your precious plays, but good enough to put you here. Who's the better actor now, Ronald? Goodbye, Ronald. No one will see me go out, but I'll see you across the street.
Okay, Miss Landis, I got the pass key right here.
That's so kind of you, Mr. Anson. Personally, I begged her to leave the old thing here and have you throw it out, but Elaine missed it.
It's Mr. Ames.
Ames. Yes, yes, I was just going. I couldn't resist coming up and making one final check just for myself. The door seemed to be open and Anyway, the illusion's quite vanished. Quite. There's nothing there.
Really, Mr. Ames? That's good. All right, Mr. Anson. Will you ask the moving men to go in there now and take away the chair?
Thank you, Robert Montgomery, for a splendid performance.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 27th of January, 1949 on CBS. And so closes this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Golden Era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.